It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Remember our high school classwork? Well, a while ago, I was in the basement looking at some high school classwork, and it dawned on me seeing all these pages, boxes of work, essays, and so forth, that my instructor was the only one who saw it. And actually, nobody benefited from it, really. I guess I did, because I had learned something. But most classwork is something that goes unseen after it's graded, as mine did. But a group of teachers in Cedar Rapids is trying to change that for the good of students and for the community. Today, we'll spend an hour with the members of, it's called Iowa Big, formerly known as Big Ideas Group, or simply BIG for short. It's a project-based program in the Cedar Rapids area that gets students out of the classroom to work on projects that have some sort of lasting impact on the community. All kinds of projects that we'll hear about today, and we want to learn about the basics of this innovative program before we meet a student. Let's talk with Sean Cornally. He's headmaster and lead teacher at Iowa Big, or formerly the Big Ideas Group. Hi, Sean.
Hey.
I'll have to get used to the new name you've given yourself, which is within the last couple days.
Yeah, we just picked it out. We have a concerted effort to make Big a partnership across a lot of municipal areas and school districts, and so we thought we would change the name to reflect that we'd like to serve a lot of the state and not just one area.
Give us the elevator pitch. What is Big?
BIG was created to provide a valid option for some students and families who would like their core content learned in a project-based way. We don't have any delusions that somehow the way that BIG teaches students is the best way or the right way, but we do know that for a subset of students, it is the best way to learn a certain kind of material. And we hope to serve those students just as well as you know, what you'd think of as a traditional school serves that set of students that enjoys that experience.
Okay, so project-based learning. We do projects in regular public schools. How is this different?
Sure. So that's a question we get a lot is how, you know, you can do a project in a social studies class and, you know, make a papier-mâché pyramid and do all sorts of stuff about ancient Egypt. And BIG would actually not classify that as a project. Our rules for projects are that the student has to really be in love with the fundamental question behind the project, and the product that is that's produced by this project has to be something that really helps the community, that there's an audience for, that someone outside of the school walls is saying, I really want you to do this. I need to know the answer to that question too. I'm glad you're leading that investigation. And finally, we demand that the projects our students do are fundamentally interdisciplinary. So you can't just open up the back of an advanced math book and start doing problems and, you know, do a project that they suggest from the back of the book. That's just – to us, that's – you're not going to find an audience and you're going to sort of you're going to lose the momentum on that kind of project.
Mm-hmm. So when I come into your type of classroom here as opposed to here again comparing it to a conventional classroom where we would say, okay, let's sit down. This is what we're going to learn this trimester or this semester, and here's our textbook and here are the chapters and we're going to work our way through here. We're going to have quizzes and we're going to have tests and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast to that, what happens there on your first days for a student?
Well, the first thing I do with students is they come into my office or they come in with their group that have decided that a project is worth doing. And so our projects come to us from the community, and they also are pitched by faculty and students. So we have a very large project pool. And from that pool, students pull out ideas for things to work on. And that pool is filtered by the faculty and by the other staff members at the school. And when they come in and say, you know, we've elected to do this project, we've been funded by the rest of the school because our curriculum is democratically decided upon by the students, they sit down and I say, hey, you know, what makes you mad about this? Why does this need to be solved? Who cares? What will the product be like? Do you really think you'll learn anything? Like, be honest with me. So, and I'm not saying that that doesn't happen in a regular school environment. In fact, far from it. But the point I'd really like to make is that we really believe we're a valid, more open project-based model for the kinds of students that are attracted to that. The projects that you might do in a traditional class, you know, you can think of those PowerPoints that students, you know, might make and then present to the class and then sit down and everyone sort of gives a little, you know, golf clap. And then you move on to the next PowerPoint because it shows what the student did and learned. There's a subset of students that really enjoys that and gets a lot out of it. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue that every student thrives in that model. And we'd be hard-pressed to prove that every student thrives at Big. So we tend to have this conversation about who cares? Why are you mad about it? Why does it need fixed? And that's how we begin our project process.
Well, let's get right into a project. We have one of your students here. Kinsey Farmer is with us. Hi, Kinsey.
Hi.
You came to our Iowa City studio. Thank you very much. You are how old?
I am 17.
You're 17, and you go to a public school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Prairie.
You go to Prairie in Cedar Rapids, but then also spend how much time in this program, in this school?
Well, technically I'm down at the school for an hour on Monday, but I do a lot of work in the free time I have at school during the day.
Okay. You have a project. What is your project for the community that you have been working on?
Yeah, well, this year I am organizing a conference called Success to the Power of She for high schoolers like me to be inspired to dream big and to do achieve the success that they feel like they deserve.
She, so this is specifically
for young women.
For young women. So what did you see there? Sean talked about needs in the community. What did you identify as a need for young women that wasn't being met as well as it might have been, and that you're there to help out?
Yeah, well, the first week I walked into Big, Sean asked me what I was mad about, and I said, it frustrates me when I see girls follow around their boyfriends in the hallway, like their boyfriend can tell them whatever they want to do. And I feel like girls most often in high school are told what they're good at and what they should do in their career with that. Well, compared to my male friends are all excited about being a stockbroker, a real estate agent, or a neurosurgeon. My girls that are friends are like, I want to be a nurse or an engineer, and it's these very cookie cutter things that they choose to do with their career, and I don't feel like they're as excited as my male classmates. And so, and we're not told often enough that we can dream big and do whatever we want. And so I identified that as a problem for me, and if I have a problem, I feel like there's other girls that have that problem too. So hopefully the conference will inspire girls to know that they can do whatever they want with their future, not just the few things that we're told that we should do.
Mm-hmm. So this is a conference to be held on May 9th coming up. Where will it be held in Cedar Rapids? Can anyone attend?
Yeah, well, there's tickets online, but the conference is at the Whipple Auditorium in the new downtown beautiful public library. And there's tickets available for community members, but they also have the option to sponsor students as well. So if they can't come, the girls, I'm hoping, will all be able to attend for free because I think it's important for them to come.
Guys allowed?
I have guy volunteers, but they won't participate as much as the girls, but yes, they're welcome.
Okay. So you'll have a number of speakers in sort of a TED-style talk,
yeah.
Series of TED Talks. Who's coming?
The Lieutenant Governor, Kim Reynolds, which I'm really excited about, Coach Lisa Bluder, and then there's two professors, one of psychology, Dr. Sarah Farrell, and one of neurology, Dr. Terry Thompson, and then the biology teacher from my school, Matt Tatey, and then Amanda Styron is a community entrepreneur mm-hmm. in our area.
So they're on board with this idea, this observation that you just shared with us. You shared with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to give variations or insights into that problem and suggestions as to a way to change the culture. So what you see happening in your hallways at Prairie High School won't happen in the future for other young girls?
Yeah, I hope that a lot of the women leaders that will be talking will be an example for young women, as we don't really get that example all the time of someone that's kind of gone against the current and done something new and different. So Coach Bluder, she inspires her basketball team all the time, and I want her to share that kind of stuff with the audience on May 9th.
Okay, very good. Tell us, how did you get started in this program? I want to talk to Sean, too, about how a student gets into this, because Sean, back to you. How many students are currently enrolled?
Oh, that's a difficult question to answer because it depends on the project that the student is particularly interested in. And some of the projects are seasonal, depending if they have to be outside. Right now, I'd say we have an active about a dozen students, and we've had enrollment up in the 30s. And sometimes we hold events called hackathons where we'll have 60 kids all in one place working on issues and problems. So that's a hard number to pin down because we're really trying to buck this idea that being in a room for a certain amount of hours, for a certain amount of days, is the appropriate way to learn something.
Okay. And so what Kinsey's doing coexists with all of her studies at the public school. She doesn't – it's like an extra class. Is that how we should understand it, or is it like a different school part of the time?
This year, we look like an elective to the regular school system. So a student, you know, signs up for an hour or two of their day. They don't take a class during that time. And that's the time they come visit me. They drive around doing their project, emailing, you know, doing whatever it is, graphic design, whatever it is they need to do. Next year will be a half-day program. So students in the corridor, which is, you know, sort of the Lynn and Johnson County and satellite counties, will be able to register for an a.m. or a p.m. session of BIG, and that starts at the beginning of the day or starts after lunch. And then they'll come down and, you know, form their teams naturally and choose their projects democratically and begin to work on things with a little bit more time dedicated to the program. And they'll be able to decide what kind of required credit that they'd like to get from the program, which is a fundamental change from the elective credit that we're offering students this year.
Kinsey, what was your first impression of the program? How did you learn about it?
Well, since I was in like fourth grade, I've always complained to my parents that school didn't go at the pace that I wanted it to, and it was never really relevant to me. And so I, whether that be faster or slower, this was something that was brought to my attention that would be for me. And then when I first sat down and talked to Sean, he asked me what I was mad about or what I was passionate about. I got really excited because finally I got to learn something through an avenue that I was passionate about, which doesn't really happen in regular school.
You find that's a big difference in your public schools. You don't, not every class, but occasionally tap into passions in your public school.
Yeah. Certain things in like English and history are very interesting to me, but not everything.
Here you got to self-select. Sean opened the door and says, "What makes you mad? That is a problem needs fixing in your eyes, and you can tackle it." Do you find you have more energy, more ideas, more creativity when you are presented with a problem to solve like this?
Yeah, and it's about me as a student and what I'm learning and then how I can help other people with that. And so I'm excited to come to big school all the time, and I'm excited to work on my project. I love getting up in the morning and ready for whatever my project will bring that day, which is something that I lost for a long time. Mm-hmm.
Do you think
school.
This is shaping your future?
Oh, yeah. There's no question.
There's no question mm-hmm. that it has been a primary shape in it. Sean, you want to jump in?
Can I ask Kinsey a question real quick?
Absolutely.
So you just described to me what is actually kind of a nightmare for teachers, which is I'm only going to learn about what I want right now. And I think that sounds a little bit, you know, it could sound a little bit wishy-washy. And I was just wondering, is there material that you've learned that you didn't originally want to know about?
Yes.
Like
yes.
What?
Graphic design was really hard for me. Still is. And then a lot of the neurological differences in males and females, I had to read a book, and I wasn't too excited about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you find out about the neurological differences in males and females that has to do with your subject of women, young women not having their own dreams? Let me just put it that way.
Yeah. A lot of times girls make decisions based on the family that they might have or the choices that will face them, like in having a family or not, and guys don't normally have to think about that. So even like deep down in our brain, that's how we're wired, is to think in terms of like having a baby and having a child. So that was interesting to learn about. And that means that we have a lot of hard choices in the future.
Kinsey Farmer is with us. She's a student at Prairie High School in Cedar Rapids, but also a student at Iowa Big. We're talking about this innovative project-based program that gets students out of the classroom to work on projects that they think of. And that have a lasting impact on the community. Sean Cornally is with us. He's headmaster and lead teacher at Iowa Big. You can find out more about them in a new website, iowabig.org. Is that up and running?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say hello to Kelly Cole. Hi, Kelly. You're in our Iowa City studio as well.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Kelly, you are the father of a student who's been in this program, McKenna Cole. Let me start off by having you tell us what McKenna's project was or is. It's ongoing, isn't
it? You bet. I am going to mention that she's not here because she's at a school in Lone Tree talking about her project.
Okay.
So there's a benefit, getting her out talking about it. I think she was on a field trip to Fermi Lab and Argonne National Laboratory with Advanced Physics? Yeah, with Sean Cornally. And a tour guide at Argonne mentioned very briefly the idea that trees could be used to mitigate toxic waste dumps, for example. And that little seed stuck with her. And she looked into it more. I watched her write emails to scientists around the country, including the University of Iowa, asking questions She and Sean Cornelli began working on some ideas, and eventually she stumbled onto the idea that trees, in particular trees like poplars and willows, can be used to mitigate nitrogen and other substances from wastewater. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea that really stuck with her is that nitrogen coming from wastewater treatment plants in Iowa is relatively untested and unregulated. And she linked that up with the growing dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico and the fact that Iowa agriculture plays a part in that.
So if we can mitigate that nitrogen, not so much of it will head down the Mississippi and create the dead zone in the Gulf.
Exactly. And she discovered that the process of using trees, and particularly the roots of trees, can be significantly less expensive than the traditional lagoon-based approach to treating wastewater.
So, Kelly, how far has your daughter's project gone from the thinking about it, the researching it, into the putting it into practice and making it actually do what that seed of an idea thought it should do?
Well, she really played the role of a project manager. Once she located an expert who helped her explore the scientific literature and really come to grips with what the current issues are, she was adamant about a project that would discover new knowledge, not just something that replicates existing knowledge or is simply describing technology that any expert in the field would say with certainty, this is going to work. So she really was thinking about it like a scientist.
So she wanted to be on a frontier there.
She did. She did. And she reached out to a person who got his PhD from Iowa, University of Iowa, and then began a business in North Liberty, Lewis Licht. I think the company is Ecolo Tree. Mm-hmm. And mentioned that he had already done work with poplar trees on mitigating wastewater in other parts of the country, including Iowa. And so that focused her on mitigating nitrogen. And, of course, her question was, well, then what's left to discover? And one of the things that was left to discover was whether or not this mitigation continued to work when the trees went dormant, particularly during winter.
Mm-hmm. And we have those in Iowa.
Yes, we do. And we just got through a rather rough one.
Yes, we did. That's why I mention it.
And so at that point, she collaborated with Dr. Licht, and he supplied some of the equipment. But for the most part, he stepped in, helped her get things set up, sort of, and then stepped out of the picture. And then McKenna functioned as a project manager.
Mm-hmm. Where's it headed? She's giving a talk today. That's why she's not with us.
Right.
But where is this headed? Where is the dream headed for her?
For her, I think this was a chance to be a project manager on a true scientific project where she had to assemble people, partner with the Solon Wastewater Treatment Facility, solve problems. She just presented it at the Iowa State Science and Technology Fair. And she was invited to submit her manuscript to some water quality. Sean, do you remember what the name of that was?
I don't remember the name.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Some water quality contest from the state of Iowa, and there's a national. It ends up in Stockholm eventually. And then she submitted her manuscript or the poster to the Google Science Fair. She is looking at a future. She wants to be a scientist but do more medically related research.
Okay. Kelly Cole, would your daughter McKenna, how would she have fared in a community without Iowa Big in it, with all the benefits she had from the public school that she – which public school is she? Which high school did she go to?
She's at Solon High School.
She's at Solon. Okay.
Yeah.
At Solon. So imagine that minus Big and tell us what the importance of Big as a complement to her education is.
Well, I think it fed a passion. She's a very motivated student. She wants to excel. I think being able to take a rather large project that she felt that she had a significant investment in coming up with the idea and then implementing it, I think it allowed her passion to ignite. And she was able to wear lots and lots of different hats, graphic artist, author, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm reminded what Kinsey perhaps said, that perhaps the speed at which she was put on was not always – sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's slower in a public school when you're in a classroom setting. It sounds like – and one of the advantages here is because it's so individual, Sean, you go at the speed you want to. And if you've got enough passion, you just go, go, go.
Agreed. And the goal there is to let students sit on material and ideas and stumbling blocks on purpose to let them really realize, like, you know, when someone is actually doing a project and actually getting something done, that sometimes it doesn't make progress for a week. And then the next week, you can't believe how many emails you've had to answer and how many things you've had to design and how many, you know, sort of issues with the pump. I don't know how many issues with the pump McKenna had. Oh, my gosh. But, you know, you realize, and then you have a week off almost, just sort of accidentally. And that natural progression through material with support from staff is absolutely necessary, I think, at least once for every student to get them to understand, you know, what will it feel like to go to college? What will it feel like to go to graduate school? There's a certain independence. And I want to provide that to students because there are some students who won't imagine themselves in an environment like college or graduate school.
We have about a minute before we have to take a break. Sean, is there anything like this in the state? I mean, you're expanding here. We want to hear about that more in our second half hour. Are you latching on to other ideas in the state or in the country?
Absolutely. I mean, districts like College Community School District, Muscatine, Waukee, Van Meter, Howard Wynn, all these school districts are trying things that are in this vein, and we're all learning from each other. And I have to say that the Cedar Rapids Community School District, which is one of the second largest districts in the state, has really, really put their budget, their personnel, and all of their talent in a lot of it into building this program, really thinking about it, bringing the whole team on board. And I couldn't be more proud to be working for the district that I graduated from in this project.
Sean Cornally is with us, headmaster and lead teacher at Iowa Big. This is an innovative project-based program that gets students out of the classroom to work on projects. We've been hearing about those that have an impact on the community and get these students excited about things that not only an instructor sees but that benefit the community and perhaps lay a path for a future career. If you have any questions about Big, we're talking about this hour, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Back in just a few minutes with more of Iowa Big. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So glad to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, of course, Politics Wednesday, and news breaking today. We'll certainly focus on the Supreme Court today upholding Michigan's ban on the use of race as a factor in college admissions. In a 6-2 ruling today, the justices announced that the state of Michigan did not violate the U.S. Constitution when its voters banned affirmative action. We'll talk about that and many other political developments of the week tomorrow on this program, Politics Day on River to River. Today we're talking about something called Big, Iowa Big. IowaBig.org is where you can find out more information about them. It's an innovative program, a project-based way of learning in the Cedar Rapids area that gets students out of the classroom to work on projects that, well, ignite their passions but also have an impact on the community. That's one of the criteria that a project has to fulfill. And joining us, Sean Cornally, headmaster and lead teacher at Iowa Big, along with Kinsey Farmer, a student. She goes to Prairie High School in Cedar Rapids, in addition to being a member of a student in Big. Kelly Cole, the father of a 12th grader, McKenna Cole, who has big ideas about wastewater treatment with poplar and willow trees. And we'd like to have you join our conversation. In five words or less, what should we expect out of our high school students? Iowa Big says creativity, self-regulation, and abstract thinking. Perhaps you can add some other words to that. You can join us 1-866-780-9100. Email us river2river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's go back to Sean Cornally And have you tell us a little bit more about this alternative way, this, I guess, an adjunct to learning in our public schools. You have a term for something that is the transition a student makes when a student goes from sort of traditional learning environment to this learning environment, the five-week lull. What is that, the five-week lull?
Sure. So the five-week lull is something we see whenever we attempt to airlock a student, which is another term we use internally. And that term means that you're taking a student from a time-based educational experience. You know, you go to a classroom for an hour a day. That hour a day teaches you something, and then you do that for the next 80 days or 180 days. And then that teaches you the content you were supposed to learn that year, which is works for some students. We have an airlock where we say, you know, we're going to move from that time-based system now to a project-based system where the unit of your education is now the completion of these projects and the interface with the community and the sort of intangible communication and scheduling and employability things that these students will encounter in this way. But, you know, to the detriment of covering, you know, maybe the last two chapters of a book, you know, and so we give that trade-off. And the five-week lull happens when you airlock that student and you say, hey, you're going to have to switch from a time-based mentality to a project-based mentality. And if you want even more edgy jargon, right, the competency-based mentality. That five-week lull is the student really trying to figure out, well, how do I manage my own time? And, you know, McKenna, we can talk about her. She really took to it quickly. But that five-week lull was a very stressful period for her, and it wasn't really a lull. She was very productive, but the stress level of her, like, what is he expecting of me? You know, I'm used to teachers telling me what to do.
What are the phases that the person is going through here in shorter or longer periods?
Sure. So the five-week lull is when the student is trying to figure out, why isn't the teacher telling me exactly what to do? And because one of the things we're trying to teach is this is how you plan a project. This is how you quantize the progress you're going to make towards your large and almost too big goal, it seems at first. And I bet Kinsey can talk about that. And that lull is interesting. And then they go into phase two where they get it. They realize, you know, I'm in charge. I make the goals. This teacher is here to support me. I seek them out when I need help. And they actually go through this almost like euphoric manic period where it's like they can do everything and the project gets out of control. And there's, let's do this. Let's make that. Let's make this robot that like ice fishes. And, you know, let's do all sorts of crazy stuff. And then they enter phase three where they sort of, I think of it as fully abstract. I know it's an attainable weekly goal. I know that that's incrementally getting me towards my final goal. And a lot of our students right now are in phase three. And I'm really excited to onboard a whole bunch of new phase one kids here in August.
Mm-hmm. Kinsey, do those phases sound recognizable to you? Did you once, I don't know, this new – you went through the airlock. That's a good one. That's like going – you're leaving the spaceship. You're going out into space. What? I don't know exactly.
But we want to say that both sides of the airlock are valid. I want to keep that point really, really clear.
Okay. So how did that look like for you? Was it a harder transition? Did you immediately take to it?
I've always wanted something like this, so I feel like I took to working on my own quicker. But I think the biggest thing for me, the phase or whatever, was that someone else believed in me more than I believed in myself. So, I mean, Sean told me the first week, like, I think that you can do this crazy conference, and I didn't think I could do it. So that was a big phase for me to get over.
Mm. And that you could actually originate something. You could create something.
Yeah, and it would – yeah.
Mm-hmm. How has this changed the way you look at your life at the age of, what did you say, 17?
Yeah.
How does that look? How does that change you?
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, I'm excited to get up every day and to go do something that matters. And so I know now that me as a 17-year-old, I play a part in my community and what Cedar Rapids might be or what the girls around me might feel about themselves. So I feel like I matter, which is awesome.
You know, in Iowa, we've long had a problem of exporting some of our best students around the country because they feel all the things are happening in the big metropolitan areas around the country. Do you feel, when you talk about doing things for your community, more connected to Cedar Rapids and to Iowa?
Yeah, well, when I first started, you know, going out in the community with this project, I felt like everyone embraced me, which makes me not want to leave. I mean, it would be almost stupid to leave when there's a community like this that will support something as crazy as a 17-year-old hosting a conference. So,
okay, we're talking about Iowa Big, a new project working in the Cedar Rapids area. I want to introduce Troy Miller to our conversation. He's Director of Strategic Partnerships at Iowa Big. Hi, Troy.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
So, Director of Strategic Partnerships, you are kind of a connector to the community because we've learned that these projects need to be community-based. These are projects project-driven learning, but we have to find what in the community to also make them happen.
Right. So the community is the lifeblood of what BIG is. In our communities, we have lots of opportunities, lots of problems. And when we connect those with passionate students, magic happens. You know, the secret sauce is how can we work with other people?
Okay. Okay. So give me some examples of what you found out there, a need that got served by this program and by students who are passionate.
Sure. Well, we have a really neat opportunity coming up with a hackathon that's occurring.
April 30th.
April 30th. There's a local company here in the corridor. It's called Cyber Anatomy. They said, hey, you know, we have some interest in some students working on some 3D animated computer projects that ultimately is a project that is due for customers in China in the fall. And so that's a really neat example of how students can learn a software called Unity, which most people haven't heard of, create 3D products and have them serve people in another country.
A hackathon, Sean, sounds somewhat menacing.
Yeah, we mean the word hack, like the software community means the word hack. You know, let's take several technologies and mush them together to solve a problem that previously was unsolved. We take students that are in BIG and students that aren't, in fact, mostly students that aren't, and we bring them in for the day and we present them 5 to 10 problems that are worth solving. A lot of times our BIG students will pitch their projects to these students and see if we can form bigger teams to get more of that done. And they spend an entire day working on those problems, seeing what it takes, finding the resources, and whiteboarding out the next steps. Mm-hmm. And then the students that really enjoy it, the ones that identify as, you know, I think I would love a project-based model of learning for at least part of my day, those students then become a part of the program and they seamlessly transition into their teams. At our last hackathon, we had a group in Cedar Rapids say, you know, we'd love to see some orchards put in. We want the fruit used in various places, but the science and the time and the energy behind that just isn't there for this group. And so a group of students took that on, and now 5 of those students immediately joined BIG and are now pushing that project forward.
Mm-hmm. Troy, what are you hearing from the community when they realize that BIG is in their midst?
Yeah, it's a learning experience for everyone. You know, part of the battle is to help people think differently about education, how they might partner with a high school student and make it a unique experience. That's a win-win for everyone.
Do you sometimes get the reaction that, oh, high school students, so actually the community member says, I'm going to have to do all the work and I'm just sort of mentoring this student, and perhaps are surprised that actually the energy and the ideas come from the student, the power, the drive?
I think it's pretty natural for us after we get out of high school to look down at high school students and think, well, they're just not there yet. And in reality, we're just not giving them the opportunity to show what they can do.
Kelly Cole, your daughter, McKenna Cole, you described in the first half hour this wonderful idea of using certain types of trees to treat wastewater and to reduce nitrogen content in our waterways that eventually find their way to the Gulf of Mexico, at least in this part of the country. Did you see sides, a face of your daughter that you hadn't seen before growing up because of this program?
Most definitely. I think once she realized that this was under her control, there was nobody telling her what to do or how to do it, she routinely stepped out of her comfort zone. So she had to talk with adults in the community. For example, the director of the facility, Scott Kleppe, she had to interact with him because that was his facility, and there were some serious modifications made in order to supply the water from a clarifying tank to her trees. Mm-hmm. And she had to work with him through the cold winter months to make sure things didn't freeze up. She communicated with other scientists. She has done radio interviews and considered the economic impact. I watched her create formulas to see how she could scale up the trees to decide how many it would take for a community like Lisbon to employ this. So it's kind of like the project took on a life of its own, and she decided that if it's going to be successful, these things have to get done, and I'm the person that's got to do them. So I think it really drew her out of her comfort zone.
Talking about Iowa Big this hour, a tweet from the Early Bird, that's a locally owned coffee shop in Cedar Rapids. Nodding your heads here, maybe you know that the tweet says, "We should expect idealism and what-if thinking from at Iowa Big."
They have great coffee there.
Tell me, Sean Cornally, this is in many ways or in some ways. How old is this?
Big?
Yes.
Well, the idea for Big is 3 or 4 years old. But I actually left my position at Solon High School part time about a year ago to pursue this in conjunction with the Cedar Rapids Community School District and the Cedar Rapids Gazette, which has a really awesome philosophy on community building. I mean, it's an amazing organization. It's locally owned. In fact, it's owned by its employees. And they're really committed to a community that is vibrant. You know, I mean, the newspaper can only report what's happening. And if we're not creating a beautiful community, then why report it? And so helping with that has been amazing.
How is this all financed? For instance, your position, Sean.
So I'm an employee of the Cedar Rapids Community School District. And they employ me part-time. Half-time, actually. And then I'm also a quarter-time employee for Solon. And then I spend some of my time doing contract work with the Gazette.
This is in many ways, would you agree, an experiment?
We like the term pilot.
Okay. We are hearing anecdotal evidence of students seemingly happy, turned on, passionate, perhaps a life-changing experience happening within this program. But I'm wondering in terms of scientific data, do we know how it works on a larger scale when we look at data? Or are there unanswered questions that you'd like social scientists, educational scientists to find out?
I have one comment. I want to pass that to Professor Cole because it's kind of his area. But what we see is in education, what we see is when students are stressed, and I mean like stress responses like vascular stress responses and things like traditional animal stress responses, it's hard to learn. And it's hard to form new memories, and it's hard to perform. And you end up often with poor measurements of a student's ability because of a very basic physiological response to stress. And at Big, where the answer is, what do you need to get this done, not can you get this done in time, right? It's a very different kind of question with a very different set of stressors that actually allow the student, I think, a little bit more time to think. Although we do trade off the amount of content we cover. I'm not going to lie about that. But I'd like to know what Professor Cole thinks about that.
Professor Cole, tell us first of all, what are you a professor of?
I am a professor in the Department of Health and Human Physiology at the University of Iowa.
Okay. So what is your perspective on this, answering that question?
I do neuroscience research, mostly in the area of motor systems. But certainly I agree that under high-stress conditions that people don't always perform at their best, whether it's a musician or a student taking in an examination. And a project-based approach in which the process is as important as the product, stretched out over a long period of time, I think does take out that part of the equation, high stress levels, the release of all of those substances that affect how we think.
And what parent has not heard? I have 3 children myself, a couple of them adult, but the refrain that you hear from kids often is, I don't see the point in learning. And I guess that's what I'm getting at. What does that change when you see the point in certain amount of learning, do we agree, has to take place just because we need to have a foundation, right? Or can you learn it all in a project approach?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking a chicken and egg question. And any educator who's listening right now, I hope, is nodding their heads and saying, that the contextualization of learning is just as important as the actual acquisition of knowledge. And those two things go together. I mean, to teach Kinsey about cortisol and estrogen and norepinephrine and all these neurotransmitters that affect men and women very differently just because of their basic neurology and endocrine systems, she didn't want to hear any of that in week one. I started going right into it. I was like, oh, this project, I know exactly where this is going. And she's just like, yeah, don't care. Let's talk about you know, event planning and making a good, you know, making a solid political splash. And so that contextualization and that learning, they really kind of just go together in a very netted way. You know, they become necessary. You know, like Professor Cole said, you know, the project takes on a life of its own, and whether at some point whether the student really wants to learn that is immaterial because the project is demanding it. And so I'm going to do it because this project A is something I love and want to see through. So I'm going to stick through some of the parts maybe I'm not super right. pumped about. And second, it has an audience. Like someone outside of the school building really, really wants this conference or really, really wants this paper to be done. So I can't let them down. Mm-hmm. And that psychology works really great with teens.
And so the sticking points, if we can go back to you, Kinsey, saying you, what was the example you gave of something that you wouldn't have learned otherwise unless you had to put on this day-long conference.
Yeah, that neurology behind. Yeah.
Neurology, also graphic design, I think you brought up. You brought up too. So you see those more as stepping stones and not just something that, oh, some adult world tells you this is important to learn.
Yeah, and now I know that I know about those things. So if I'm leading a team in the future, I have those little tools in my toolbox to use where I wouldn't normally have those.
Mm-hmm. Sean, our hour is coming to an end, so please let me know if you'd like to jump in, any of you, with a final remark here. But I wanted to ask Sean, because we focused on two projects, really fascinating projects, a day-long TED-type presentation that's coming up, and remind us of that again, Kinsey. How can people find out more, and when is it happening?
Yeah, on my website, kinzeyfarmer.com. It's K-I-N-Z-I-E farmer.com.
Featuring many speakers, including Lisa Bluter, the head coach of the Iowa women's basketball team, and centered around empowering women to succeed in the professional world, getting them to think about themselves in other ways. We've heard about water treatment, courtesy of the trees that we have around here. Give us an idea of some of the other favorite projects that you've seen develop in this program.
Sure. One of the other ones that I'm just in love with, and I'm in love with all of them, is a student at Jefferson High School in Cedar Rapids came to us and said, I'd really like to do music production, and I have an audience back home in Africa, and I want to make music for them, and I love it. And it's Swahili gospel music, and he has this whole concert in his head. And as he said, I just need a computer and a keyboard. Can I do this? And I said, yeah, you know. And so he and I go through some music theory together and some basic piano technique. And he's producing this amazing album of music. It's at toygideon.com, toygiodini .com. And he has all of his songs up there. And actually, Troy's son is in the program. I don't know if you want to talk about the projects and learning he's done here at the end.
Sure. I got my son Isaac involved actually this past summer. He was just coming out of sixth grade, so a little bit of a non-traditional student for this. But he sat down with Sean and started working on a little computer board called an Arduino, started programming in C++ and Java. And the next thing you know, he was presenting at an event that was built for adults, the Inventor's Garage, this past fall. And he was showing people the Pong game that he created and the light sensor he had attached to his Arduino board to control the Pong paddles. And that's something that a seventh grader wouldn't typically bang out, but he can do it. And lots of students can do that. And that's when I realized what Big can do for my child. I knew that Big could do that for any child.
Okay, Iowa Big, in the final minute, Sean, tell us where this program is going, because you have lots of partners out there in the state, and you're expanding, right?
Oh, we are. We'll have 80 to 150 students starting this August, and we're going to quadruple the number of teachers that we have in the program, and we'll be moving to the new Vault location, which is in the new Geonetrics building in the Newbow neighborhood of Cedar Rapids. And what we're really excited about is that we have an amazing plethora of partners, strategic partners that Troy has helped us build, people who are giving us projects and funding and support. And without that, without that, we don't have projects.
Okay. Further on down the line, in 30 seconds, where are you in 5 or 10 years? Where is Big?
I hope we're serving the families that identify a project-based approach as appropriate for their students. I don't know how many students that is, but I hope we're serving them all.
Okay. I want to thank you very much, Sean Cornally, headmaster and lead teacher at Iowa Big. Find out more at our website. We'll have a link to iowabig.org, or you can go right to that. Thanks to Sean Cornally, Kinsey Farmer, Kelly Cole, and Troy Miller for this fascinating discussion. Good luck with all these innovations that are happening in our Iowa community. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Tomorrow on this program, Politics Wednesday. Today, the Supreme Court upheld Michigan's ban on using race as a factor in college admissions. It's one of the topics we'll have tomorrow on our program, Politics Wednesday. 6-2 ruling, justices said the state did not violate the U.S. Constitution when voters banned affirmative action. One of our topics tomorrow. We hope you'll join us. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.